The Tony Greig Show.
Welcome to The Tony Greig Show on Crick Info Talk.
News this week.
The West Indies certainly haven't disgraced themselves against the world's best team, Australia. Some may even suggest that they did very well. Sure, they lost the series 2-0, but there were occasions when they showed some class. Shivnarine Chanderpol is by far their standout player, and one can't help but wonder what the Windies would do without him. There is also some encouraging determination being displayed, which has not been evident recently. It may be that they've come to terms with the realisation that they can't sit back and leave it to Brian Lara anymore, nor do they have the disruption that some of the past West Indian players tended to blame on Lara's presence. This West Indian team resolve was on display when Chanderpol and Bravo were batting during the last test. At one stage, they looked as if they could pull off an extraordinary victory and level the series. That wasn't to be, but their performance did extract from Ricky Ponting some positive comments about the West Indies, and let's face it, the Aussies aren't inclined to throw comments around willy-nilly. I'm not going to get overexcited just yet, but with everyone fit, it may be that we're going to witness a little more consistency from the Windies, and who knows, that could just lead to the revival we would all love to see. It's also worth mentioning that the West Indies managed to beat Australia in the one-off 2020 match they played, and while there were many who will say, oh, but it was only 2020, don't underestimate the encouragement that victories like this do for teams, especially against the Aussies and perhaps more importantly, just before a one-day international series. Xavier Marshall set alight a gloomy Kensington Oval as the West Indies won by 7 wickets in the shortest completed 2020 international yet. Marshall bashed a thriller minute 36 of 15 balls as the Windies successfully chased down Australia's 3 for 97 with 11 balls to spare in a rain-affected match reduced to 11 overs per side. In the one-day internationals, both sides will be introducing fresh faces. This will be yet another opportunity for the injury-prone Shane Watson, but like Sean Marsh, he made a big impact in the IPL in India, so both will be keen to take things one step further in the absence of Matthew Hayden. The West Indies also have a few new faces in their 14-man squad in batsman Andre Fletcher and Williams Perkins and teenage fast bowler Kimar Roach. But they will again be without skipper Chris Gayle, the only batsman to score 100 in 2020 internationals. I fancy the Aussies to win the series, but the West Indies may just sneak in the odd victory, especially if there's rain about and the matches are short. Kevin Peterson's century gave England a 114-run win in the first one-day international against New Zealand, and it's exactly what England needed. The big right-hander timed his innings perfectly and was the mainstay of England's 307 for 5. That's a big score. New Zealand rarely looked set. Stuart Broad, Graham Swan and Collingwood sharing 8 wickets, and the Kiwis fell to 193 all out in the 43rd over, so they really got quite a thrashing. When England play limited overs cricket with this level of passion, they look competent enough to take on anyone. It all seems to hinge on getting Peterson in and performing in the aggressive fashion he knows so well. England's new-look top order has a much more positive appearance to it, and they would do well to stick with it. The second match was a different matter. New Zealand were denied victory when the game was abandoned with only 6 balls left to be bowled to constitute the result. The New Zealanders were desperate to complete the 20th over, which would have allowed them a win under the Duckworth-Lewis system had they scored 7 further runs without losing a wicket. Still a bit of an if. But to the agony of Brendan McCullen in particular, who was unbeaten on 60, the umpires decided that the conditions had deteriorated too much and the game was called off. The time will come soon when matches that are severely reduced like this one will be played under 2020 laws. Let's face it, in this day and age, rain should not stop the final 6 balls of any match being bowled. In Game 3, Tim Southey, the youngster, and Kyle Mills were the New Zealand heroes as they won a 10th low-scoring game in Bristol to level the series 1-1. Southey took very good figures, 4 for 38, and Mills won the Man of the Match award for hitting 47 and taking 2 for 42, as England lost by 22 runs. England let New Zealand off the hook, allowing them to make 182 after they'd been in huge trouble at 75 for 6. Stuart Broad delivered his 10 overs straight from the start and conceded only 14 runs. That's very, very mean bowling. He managed, actually, to bowl four maidens as New Zealand's top order froze after the dismissal of McCullum. England also collapsed horribly from 62 for 2 to 64 for 6 as Southey took three wickets in quick succession. Again, that rather backs up my theory about if Peterson gets going, well, then England get going. It may have been Midsummer's Day, but it was bitterly cold in the West Country, and with overcast conditions from the start to finish, it ensured that it was always going to be a day for the bowlers. The series is now wide open. The Asia Cup begins this week in Pakistan, and it'll be a big occasion for Hong Kong and the UAE in particular. They'll be doing their level best to perform credibly against India, Pakistan and Sri Lanka. While we all welcome the opportunity this tournament provides to Asia's cricket minnows, one has to question its place in the calendar in the future when one considers the incredible growth in the popularity of 2020 format. This, of course, is a decision for the future. In the meantime, Pakistan will be happy to have some good cricket at home, and if all goes well, it may just be that they will be able to make a case to the rest of the cricket world that playing cricket in Pakistan is relatively safe. The Asia Cup starts on the 24th of June.
What's eating Tony Greig?
Pakistan fast bowler Mohammad Asif has apologised to his nation after spending time in detention in Dubai on suspicion of carrying illegal drugs. Dubai authorities decided not to prosecute and allowed Asif to fly home to Lahore. Asif has said that he is ashamed of what happened in Dubai, but did add that he was innocent and was not carrying drugs. He was detained at Dubai Airport on the 1st of June on his way to Pakistan from the IPL tournament in India and accused of possessing a small amount of opium. But Dubai's public prosecutor decided the case was not significant enough to pursue. It is not the first time off-field problems have affected Asif's career. In November 2006, both he and fellow fast bowler Shoaib Akhtar were banned after testing positive to the performance-enhancing steroid nandrolone. But a Pakistan Cricket Board tribunal later lifted the suspension after ruling that neither player had knowingly taken the substance. The PCB verdict was later challenged by the World Anti-Doping Authority. You can see how strongly they felt about it, because whenever you catch guys like this, you've got to make an example of them because it sends out a message. Only for the Swiss-based Court of Arbitration for Sport to rule that they had no jurisdiction to reverse the decision. This is not the sort of publicity any cricketer or the game needs, and the PCB have said it will get to the bottom of all this, and they will start by quizzing the Hakim who gave Asif the banned drug as a medicine. I'll be surprised if the PCB and the ICC don't put Asif on notice that he will be very closely monitored after all the Dubai authorities have stated that Asif definitely committed the crime of smuggling and possessing opium and say he was caught red-handed. The one aspect of this case that is a little baffling is the time it took to make the decision one way or the other. It seems a little harsh to detain a high-profile sportsman for 19 days, then to release him on the basis that the case was not significant enough to pursue.
My favourite cricketer.
South Africa's Dale Steyn is one of my favourite cricketers because he has plenty to be proud of. He's fast, aggressive, and he swings the ball. He has also got plenty of stamina. All this works well for him on the field. At a recent presentation ceremony where he was awarded the South African Cricketer of the Year award, the fast bowler found himself with a microphone in his hand and had to speak. Now, I don't want to get myself into too much trouble with the fast bowling fraternity, but there are plenty of them who should definitely stay away from public speaking. What Steyn had to say came as a bit of a shock to the audience and to everyone who read the comments around the world the next day. After a few calls, one of which I'm sure would have come from his manager, the young fast bowling star was unreservedly apologetic. Dale Steyn described his ordeal like this: "I was speaking just moments after being named as South Africa's Cricketer of the Year at a gala banquet, and I was pretty emotional," he said. "I was trying to be funny and just ended up being stupid. I was an idiot," very honest of him, really was. "I was asked whether the IPL had been hard physically, and I said no, because I had only had to bowl four overs per game. The rest of my comments were meant to reinforce the fact that 2020 cricket is very, very different from Test cricket as far as wear and tear on the body is concerned. And let's face it, Dale Steyn does put everything into it. The truth is, he said, I tried my absolute hardest for Bangalore in every game, and I was as disappointed as anyone that we fared so poorly. I desperately regret my naivety and look forward to the opportunity of helping the franchise reach the semi-finals next year. Sometimes when you lose, you try to make a joke of it, to lessen the disappointment, he said. It was a stupid thing to say, and I have learned a painful lesson. Well, Steyn has written to the franchise to express his unreserved regret and has apologized and tried to explain the circumstances of his comments. Welcome to the club, Dale. This sort of thing happens to the best of us.
One question only.
Right, the question of the week. We got a lot of questions. They came in the main about Kevin Peterson's switch hits. Most of our readers think it's unfair that the MCC cleared the shot because most believe it gives the batsman an advantage. Rahul of Malherba, he thinks that if a batsman can change their stance and their grip, shouldn't bowlers be allowed to decide whether they can come around the wicket or over the wicket without informing the umpire and the batsman? Well, look, it's an interesting one, this. First, let's face it, any form of switch hit, or if you like, reverse sweep, is a risky shot. Most bowlers don't mind batsmen attempting the shot because they think they have a better chance of taking a wicket. The issue that does warrant investigation is whether or not the batsman should be allowed to change from a right-hand grip to that of a left-hander, or vice versa. This gives the batsman far more power. I do think that there is a happy medium here, and that is to allow any shot as long as the batsman maintains his usual grip, i.e. left-handers or right-handers should keep the left-hand or right-hand grip. There's also an argument that will question why we should hinder flair and talent like that displayed by Kevin Peterson. My view is that we should pause on making any drastic changes immediately. Let's see how the switch hit develops for a year or so. It may only be a 2020 fad, and in any event, is it fair to hinder an ambidextrous player? There are not many of those in any event. There is an argument that because the bowler has to declare whether he's going to go over or around the wicket and whether he's going to bowl left or right arm, does make a bit of a case that is pertinent. And if he's got to do that, of course, why shouldn't the batsman have a few restrictions imposed upon him as well? Just reiterating, I think we should let it go for a little while. Let's see if it does have an impact or whether it's just a 2020 fad. Once that happens, then we can make a decision on whether we need a law change. I'm not in favour of jumping to conclusions too quickly. Please don't forget to email your questions to tony@crickinfo.com. Don't forget to mention your name and the place where you're from. I'll pick the best question and answer it in next week's show. Thanks for your company. This is Tony for Cricket for Talk. Signing off.
The Tony Greig Show on Crick Info Talk.